Hello, fellow weird people. This is the Weird Things Podcast, and this is Brian. This week, we had an interesting weird hiccup issue where it was like somebody was turning the light switch off and on while Andrew was talking. And originally, I had hoped to kind of edit around it, but then all of a sudden, I realized I would have to assemble Andrew's points in a way that would give me editorial control over his words, which on one level was very, very attractive to me. However, I thought it better to just leave everything in context. So you're going to hear everything get a little bit garbled and there'll be some drops in there. And then you'll hear me admit that this is all my internet's fault. And then we'll get back on track. So rather than try to hide it, we'll just present everything as it is. Thank you to everybody who supports the show and make this possible. Here's Andrew.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things Podcast. I'm Andrew Mean, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, hello.
And Justin Robert Young.
That's me.
So, gentlemen, this week's been an interesting week for technology and AI in particular, which is, I should just have a button to press that and have it say that every time. Yeah. And in particular, we had several things come out. Previously, like I think we before, I don't know if we covered it much, but like, Facebook had updated their Llama to like 3.2, their newest versions of the Llama models. And I think we talked about maybe like they have a Llama 1B, a 1 billion parameter model, tiny enough to fit on top of, you know, fit in your phone, which is actually kind of a cool model. This week we had OpenAI had a series of announcements. A couple of them are pretty cool. And we'll get to what Meta announced this week too, which is also pretty awesome. But OpenAI had their Dev Day. And Dev Day is now, this was their second Dev Day, which is basically they invite developers to come to, in this case, a very sweaty location in San Francisco and see some of the latest announcements for the developer community. And they showcased off some very cool stuff. They have a thing that's called the real-time API. And what this is basically the ability to, when you want to do, let's say, when you're talking to voice mode and you're talking to ChatGPT and the new advanced mode, which we, you know, have all had and loved and playing with for years now.
Hey.
What it does is it creates this connection so that when you're speaking to the AI, you can do this nonstop conversation. So now they've created an API that lets you, anybody who wants to build an app on top of it can do that and have that same conversation back and forth, whether it be text or audio, is, you know, extremely engaging. And you can put that in apps. It's a little pricey, you know, I think the real-time API, when you're talking to like what it costs per minute, but if you're trying to do like customer support or phone ordering,
oh yeah,
that's cool. They did a demo, which was kind of their version of the Google demo years ago, where they had their AI agent call up like a restaurant, ask for details. Here it goes on, the call starts and says, hey, I'm an AI voice assistant for so-and-so. I'd like to place an order. And they place the order to somebody standing on stage and basically said, hey, I want to order a bunch of chocolate-covered strawberries and, you know, and negotiate it. It's like it knew the budget it had, it knew the address and whatever. And so that was kind of a pretty cool thing because you're able to see this voice assistant have a conversation with somebody over the phone.
Is it worth looking at that clip? What should I search for?
I don't know if the clip is there.
Okay.
I don't know if it's up yet. Yeah.
This is Maine giving us a on the ground reporting. Well, so if it's expensive, I can understand why. And, you know, we've had conversations about, well, what does it mean for this to, let's say, replace somebody's job that would otherwise pick up the phone? I think that we have seen, at least in our modern world, that there are far fewer customer service representatives that we feel would be good enough that would actually solve our problem. And so if we can augment it with this technology, it would be fantastic as long as it can actually do things that we want it to do. And if it's either on the calling end or the receiving end, you know, look, either if I can tell my AI assistant that please solve this problem for me, so I don't have to be sitting in a chat window all day and it knows and understands what solution needs to come back and can ping me when it's done, that's great. Or on the other hand, if I'm talking to a voice assistant, but I can actually make requests that get done in a timely manner, boy, I would love it. I would love for, I for one welcome our robot overlords to the world of customer service.
Totally unironically and full-throatedly. I mean, like the fact that I have to like jailbreak a CSR when I call Spectrum, the fact that they won't actually listen to me until the 45 minute mark, the fact that this is an autonomous human being who's living a life where they have to make decisions out in the real world, but they are placed within a rigid structure in which you could tell she had to stick to the script, even though she knew that this was dumb. And we both had to do this stupid kabuki play. And it's, we had to get past that 45 minute mark before finally real action was taken. It's like a video game that you have to start at level one every effing time. And then you get all the way up to, oh, finally, we're at new territory where maybe we'll actually get somebody to fix this.
Yeah. Whenever you're really in it, like Brian is right now working with Spectrum because there's problems with the internet to his HQ. It just is like the most frustrating part is wherever you leave issues, when you have to call back to move the ball forward again, is just like, you know, it's like trying to talk to Drew Barrymore in 51st Dates. Like they've just totally forgotten everything that's happened. And it, you just, you know, like, no, look, check your records. I've already called in. I talked to Doug and then I talked to Evan and then Evan gave me to Brian. So please, can you just get me back to that person or an equivalent now? And they're like, well, would you like to subscribe to Cinemax? No, I'm not that invertato delecto. Please get me to where I need to be.
And at least in a movie like Edge of Tomorrow, there was the secret code word of which middle name she claimed to have that would be a proxy. It was like a save game point about like, okay, I could trust you this amount immediately. Yeah.
So what's interesting too is like they came out with it, and I think it bit a little bit of a pricey end, but also, you know, you have a technology people have talked about this forever and people want DeepGram, which I think they've got really good speech to text and text to speech technology. Literally a day later, they unveiled the DeepGram voice agent API, which is going to be their version of that. And we're going to see a Google product. We're going to see a lot of other people coming out with like similar sorts of things. And as you said, that part of what's interesting is when you take a really smart system like a GPT-4.0, or, you know, if you can figure out a fast 0.1 that can negotiate and can kind of like, you know, you think about that where, because the thing we've talked about, like in a fun idea I'd love to explore at some point would be, you know, literally a startup that just literally has your AI negotiate and negotiates with somebody else's AI and knows what you want, what you don't want, and thinks of new things to get out of that. That's the world we get into. And, you know, we've talked before, I think we mentioned before, there was a paper that came out that was really about how to manipulate people, but they put it under, you know, how to convince people of falsehoods or whatever and conspiracy theories or how to talk them out of it. It was really, you know, how to super manipulation. And that's the thing that we worry about. You know, when you talk about like real concerns with AI, super manipulation is actually a thing, because when you have the most persuasive AI on the planet, you don't want to walk into that naked. But I think that's where, you know, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to have my AI lawyer or my AI negotiator go in. And I've said this to people, like, what are you going to do when we reach like superhuman persuasiveness? It's like, what, I have virus defense on my computer. We've had human expenses. You know, we have police forces, we have lawyers, we have all these other things to protect us from other organized intelligences. And why would it be different?
Well, and of course, the immediate response from some people will be like, oh, so you could just have a gatekeeper that prevents you from ever learning the truth, or like they'll wrap themselves in a bubble. But I don't believe that's the case. I believe that once it's an option, like from selected presets, you know, would you like your AI information gatekeeper to only provide facts that confirm all of your theses, or would you like a balanced diet of information? And it's like people are likely to select that stuff. You know, again, there are questions of trust, whether or not we trust this entity, et cetera. But I feel like everybody likes to believe that they have a healthy, balanced diet of information that they're taking in, and that they'll select that option if it's available.
Yeah, I mean, it's a culture for you if you don't want to. And I think that, you know, me, I might just give an AI my power of attorney, you know, so that, you know, yeah. I might be talked into anything like, I want to cybernetically enhance whales. You know, it sounds great. I could give you my whole money. This is the greatest idea ever. So they announced that some other features they have, their Vision API, which is their ability for the GPT-4 to look at stuff. You can now fine tune it. Big limitation there is it can't do anything with faces. I tried to run a thing with some like some illustrations and stuff I had. It's like, nope. So I think the challenge they have is they have some amazing technology, but they have much firmer rules or things they're trying to do for guidelines for what they think is safe or whatnot. I would argue, as a guy outside OpenAI, not currently working at OpenAI, that I think sometimes these things are literally 2 years behind the times because you know, I had a conversation like, well, you know, there's some practices. I'm like, literally, I can do an open source model that's, you know, going to be good for most purposes and don't have to worry about any of that. Like, we're not protecting anything. You know?
Yeah.
But that, you know, those things are available. Prompt caching, which is an interesting thing. So what this means is, let's say, you know, Brian, you create like, you know, Brian's, you know, marketing wizard, you know, growth bot, whatever AI, and you have a really long prompt that you have to put in there. That's like 3,000 tokens each time. Mm-hmm. So what prompt caching does, and other companies offer this thing, Google's done this too, whatever, is that basically, because if you keep hitting the API with that over and over again, and there's a certain cost to each time you put in a bunch of context, if it's cached, if it's kept in memory, it lowers the cost. So now what happens is they've reduced that by like 50%. So if you keep sending the same prompt back to it, you only pay half as much for your input tokens, which is kind of really cool because I'll give you an example of what that means from just the sheer economics of where we've been about with pricing and stuff on stuff, where historically we talked about when GPT-3 came out, it was 6 cents per 1,000 tokens. Now GPT-4o for input tokens is if you do GPT-4o mini, it's 15 cents per million input tokens. If you're using prompt caching, basically if most of your prompt is the same prompt, you're at 0.075 cents per million tokens.
Yeah.
So that's like an incredible saving. Well, and that works too. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask, I assume also what one thing I've noticed when you go back to zero and you try to train it up for, let's say, a complex task, you don't want it. You can't just begin with your wish. You have to do all the throat clearing to get there. But I've noticed even if you say the same things in the throat clearing to get it up to the point where it's ready to do the task, because randomization is baked in at a core level, you get different results sometimes. Like sometimes the spell works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, temperature can affect that. There are a couple factors for that. But you think about this, where like I have for my app that I'm working on my wife, Channel 3, which is this thing for helping you do like image design and layout for that. I send these conversations back in. And so these conversations like, hey, we did this, we did this, we did this. These might be 4,000, 5,000 tokens. And so it's automatic. And the new request might literally be a sentence that says, make it bigger. So what's great is that just reduced my cost by half.
Yeah,
for doing that. And I can either say I'm going to provide more context or whatever. And again, other companies have offered this, but it's nice to see OpenAI do it. They then had kind of a really cool feature, which it's going to sound a little technical at first, but really, if you can know, you know, you can what we do call fine tune your own version of GPT-4. And what that means is I can take a bunch of data now, like conversation data of like, this is how I answer questions. This is a format. Take 30 or 40 examples and train a model to learn on that. And then next time you just ask the model of how to answer it. So fine tuning has become pretty simple. You can do it from the dashboard. I can show just about anybody how to fine tune their own custom model now. And it's, you know, it's extremely cheap. Right now it's free to fine tune a model. And the problem is getting that data. You know, where do you get that data from? So let's say we take, you know, Brian Brushwood's Growth Wizard app and he has, you know, thousands and thousands of conversations that have been, you know, answering these questions and answering them. Brian can go through and say, this was great, not so great, this is great. But he can take that data inside the dashboard and say, I want to train a GPT-4o model or GPT-4o mini model, what we call distill it down. So take the bigger model, take those conversations and then distill it and train a much smaller, cheaper model based upon that.
That's pretty great. The question, And I don't know if you know or not, when I create a new instance, talking to ChatGPT, does it know every other question I've asked on every other thing? And is that feeding into the model as I talk to it each new question?
No, the only way that'll do that, if you look inside ChatGPT, you'll see a thing called memory.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then you might say, see a thing called updating memory, and you can go adjust, you can edit the memory, you can wipe that. So every now and then it might grab a thing. If you say, oh, I'm Brian Brushwood, you know, I live at such and such drive, whatever. There's a little agent in there that goes, oh, this might be useful later on. Let me add it to memory. So if you look inside ChatGPT in your settings, you can see memory. That's the only kind of persistent data that it has from one conversation to the next.
Okay. And that is something you could say.
When I asked it to tell me what it knew about me, it turns out that it was storing everything that I told it about Ashley's pregnancy and now our child. It was very, very, it remembered all of anything that I had asked about that.
Yeah. So if you want to see, go into, click on your name, you know, go to settings, go to personalization, and then you'll see memory, and there's memory on or off. And then you can see, it shows you, and then you can click on manage memory.
Man,
can show you.
I'm trying to find even my name on this.
Are you in the Mac app or the browser?
Just in the browser. Oh, top right, the picture of me that Okay, got it. So settings, yep.
I think it remembered that my trash can is 38 gallons.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then where in here?
Go to settings, personalization, settings, then you see memory,
personalization,
and then manage.
This is awesome. This is the part where I take it off screen because I don't know.
Yeah.
So some of the things, I'm going to read it. Brian wants to understand the process of conflagration in wooden matches. Brian is setting up a new computer on a local area network and needs to find and connect to a disk station unit using Windows 11. Brian is using OBS on Windows 11. Brian is using CapCut Desktop for video editing as a project open on his mobile phone. He's trying to figure out how cloud computing works within CapCut to access his project on the desktop app. Brian is checking the spaces section, but only sees media, not projects. He's having difficulty. So Brian is dumb.
Brian is learning. Yeah, Brian is learning.
Exactly. It definitely learned that I'm involved with the Wizard of Ads partner. It knows that I have a MailChimp account. This is funny. I did this as a hypothetical, but it wrote it as fact. Brian has a friend named Jake who sometimes explains things using references that Brian doesn't get. Brian wants to write a song for Bonnie Brushwood. That's crazy.
All right. For those of you know, if you have ChatGPT Plus, whatever, you can go on. You know, have a very good understanding of you, but you have full control over it. You know, that's what you really want. And I've had it where I did a demo for my wife's sister, or she's my wife's a friend of hers, and she in it thought my name was Tanvi, that I was this Bollywood actress, which was, you know, adorable. And I had to go in and say, no, that's you know, delete it. So they've unveiled that, which is pretty cool. Another feature that they've had, again, I think the fine tuning is going to be great, because the way they did it, it's just super, super easy. Because every time, if you build an app, every time you have a message, you can just save that in for 30 days and then go in there and select that entire thing. So using a bigger model, the approach of the cheaper and easier it is to deploy, the more places it'll deploy. You know, you saw the latest numbers, Wall Street Journal talking about, you know, OpenAI is making like $300 million a month. They just closed their new valuation round at $155 billion. And obviously, I'm a fan and friends with everybody there. But I think it's a big, big space. There's going to be a lot of winners. And I'll talk about some of the cool stuff Meta's done in a second. But a thing they just announced, they just showed that's now available. Brian, are you in ChatGPT right now?
I am. I'm still questioning my life decisions with what I've shared with ChatGPT.
I want you to go do, let's do a new thing. Go open up.
Oh, hold on one I'm sorry. It looks like we're having severe internet hiccups. I was besmirching Spectrum, and now a most curious stopping and starting is happening of my internet.
Yeah.
What we have, if you could just bring us in, I think I can edit the some of the, your last point got real chopped up. But if it's going to keep going, I can do this as a pickup point. And you said, you were saying, here's another thing. Do I have ChatGPT open?
Yeah. So if you have ChatGPT open right now, go to the top where you can select the model, select ChatGPT 4.0 with Canvas.
Okay. With Canvas. All right. And that's in beta. Got it.
Okay. Now type in, I want you to create a business plan for a podcast empire for robots.
Okay. You know what? I want you to create a business plan for a...
And you can close your sidebar if you want.
I don't think there's much in there. You can tell I'm learning how to use different things.
That's all right.
Empire run by robots?
Four robots.
Let's say. Four robots.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. It's just the empire.
Okay. So, got it. So, this is neat.
So for our audio listeners, which is everybody, they added a feature called Canvas, which is Claude has artifacts, which is a cool way to sort of build mini apps and do sort of stuff. OpenAI's answer to that is called Canvas. And what it does is, let's say you're working on a text document and you want to keep iterating on it, it puts over into the right section of the screen. And if you notice though, Brian, if you go highlight areas of text, you can edit it.
Of their text?
Or just bring your cursor, bring your mouse over it.
Yeah.
And go over to the right.
Got it. Okay.
Go over to the right. Bring your mouse over to the right. You see that little button?
The little plus?
Yep.
Yep.
So you can click on that and you can ask it to explain, edit, or do something. If you go down to the bottom to the little tip, the suggest, there's a little cursor at the very bottom where you can, like a pencil. And you can adjust the length, you can adjust the reading level, you can add final polish, you can add emojis.
Got it. So this is taking its own output and whatever I type is going to be edited?
Well, yeah, if you go look at the bottom right corner of the screen, which we can't see here.
The suggest edits, got it?
Yes.
I can, here we go. Let's put that there.
Yeah.
Okay. Suggest edits, and it's got add emojis, add final.
Yeah, polish. If you unhighlight the whole thing, if you unhighlight what you highlighted and just let it do the whole thing, if you go down to there again and click on adjust reading level, for example, et cetera.
Oh, so let's make it kindergarten. And so right now it's rewriting everything very quickly, too. And it's like, the plan is to make a bunch of fun shows for robots. And now, if I hit stop and I change the writing level to graduate school, the exact same thing. This business plan outlines the conceptualization and execution strategy for developing a podcast network specifically designed for robotic. This just makes me hate fancy grown-up talk.
Yes.
That's crazy.
So you can do a lot of different kind of capabilities here, and let me see if I can show an example of something here. I'm going to pull up something from a book, and I'm going to try a new one here. So what's nice is that it gives you the ability to kind of fine tune what you're working on in a different environment than what perhaps than just the back and forth, because not everything fits. We've talked a lot about how, chat may not be the most ideal way in which to have to, try to work on something. And so if you can put things into a different modality, then all of a sudden you have different capabilities. Okay. And I'm going to pull up a thing. I'm going to just input a lot of text here. And I added some text in here. I'm going to try create a new document and edit. So if you paste in, let's say you're already something you're already working on from the document, you can paste it in and say, let's create a new document and edit it. And so like I had a thing, a summary of the time machine, and I pasted it in there and then it popped that in the window. So it's not just for text that you create in ChatGPT. You can add your other existing text to it and create a document for it.
That's fascinating. I saw a lot of the conversation around this was that it was the answer to the Anthropic feature artifacts. But it seems like this is that plus a little bit more in terms of the textual side of it, because artifacts seem to be mostly a coding thing.
Well, yeah, artifacts will do like pop out document stuff, and artifacts is great for like creating little code, and artifacts will run code. Artifacts will run code, yeah. Put it on an environment for you. Artifacts is very useful. I think that what OpenAI thought was they looked at like their business users. I think that what they looked at is said, okay, they have a huge part of OpenAI's customer base is enterprise users, and certainly they have amazing tools for, and you can actually code inside of here too, but it won't create like spin out apps like art. It's actually, yeah. I would say the code here is actually more useful if you're actually a coder than maybe artifacts is. Artifacts is great if you're just a regular person that just wants to make stuff. And I think that's fantastic. So they said for two things OpenAI wanted to focus on was people got to work in documents, which is most knowledge workers. And then if you want to do code, it will pop it up into a code editor and let you spin on it out. And so, I mean, it's we're in this awesome time, and you know, where both these companies and Google too, they're all, and Microsoft, they're all working and competing and just creating amazing features that we get a benefit from. And it's kind of like the, you know, iPhone versus Android, where it just kind of continues to get like really, really cool. So, I think that's,
I had the thought, Andrew, that the last time I felt this way about just a scene in general was, I mean, first of all, there's that moment when we all got the internet and all of a sudden a new world opened to us. But then there was a second wave of it when Google showed up. All of a sudden, the internet just felt so much bigger because we could find more of what we wanted. But nowadays, you know, when you Google something, you get a bunch of ads and the same five articles under SEO optimized keywords, and you have to work too hard to find anything that's not being intentionally placed in front of you. Whereas now we're back to an age where happy accidents and mistakes can happen, and you find yourself in intellectually fascinating corners. And I don't know, I'm really excited about it.
Yeah. So like I added a thing of like a summary of Time Machine. I said, can you add call outs and stuff about the characters and stuff, you know? And you know, it's just a lot of capabilities. I think we're going to start seeing, we're just the early days of how we work on documents. And I think that one thing we're finding out too, is that like, the thing that makes AI writing special is you, the more you put into it. And you can kind of tell something that's really good when somebody's done it and then plussed it or whatever, like, hey, I'm going to do a thing, but let me have the AI write the call outs or improve my language. And so, yeah, we're in this amazing phase where we're learning how to do it. And I think the end result, when we put a bit of us into it, it turns out being much better. Although there was a study that just came out where they used GPT-4 versus doctors versus GPT-4 and doctors using GPT-4, right? So you had three categories doing some like forensic diagnosis or certain kind of diagnosis. So doctors using GPT-4 and then just GPT-4.
Yeah.
Who do you think performed worst?
Worst, just I would say doctors. GPT-4.
Doctors.
Oops. Sorry.
Okay.
Doctors.
Who do you think performed best?
Oh, doctors
with GPT-4.
Yeah.
That's what we'd like to think, but nope, that wasn't the case.
Oh, no.
it was doctors GPT-4 are better than doctors. And it was to say that Ethan Mollick, who does a lot of great coverage of, he's a professor at Wharton, a lot of great coverage on this, got a lot of pushback. He frequently has to sometimes say, hey, I'm removing this post because of this or whatever. And there is certainly the AI cynic crowd out there does not like to hear whenever something outperforms or comes close to performing really well. Which I think it's fine to be skeptical and ask for facts and supportive evidence on stuff. But if you're staking your ground that we are just magic, that there's some magic quality that AI will never be able to, you know, replicate, I don't think that's solid ground to be on.
But the robots can't do this job. I'll be safe forever.
Yeah. So Meta announced a new video model, a series of video models. And these look, you know, the video space is very, very, very interesting in that there's a lot of different, you know, players in this and people trying to build different things. There are still some fundamental challenges with trying to do video, and that is that the same thing that you have to deal with images is trying to get really complex images with a lot of different elements going on at the same time. And, you know, an example I give is, you know, if you can't get an AI to generate a menu reliably, you know, an image generator, you know, a video generator is not going to do a very good close-up of a menu or things with a lot of specifics about it. And that will change over time. That will change.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's the other thing is it's, boy, do we love single tense verbs or thinking in single tense where it's just like, oh, AI is, and it's like, there is no AI is blank. There's AI currently does blank. You know, it's like so many people have made their decisions. If you made your decision about how you feel about AI 3 months ago, you already have outdated priors. Like you need to revisit it with a fresh set of eyes.
Yeah. So this was the post, a preview of the coming problem working with good AI. This is Ethan Mollick. Doctors were given cases to diagnose, with half getting GPT-4 access to help. The control group got 73% right, and GPT-4 group 77%. No big difference. But GPT-4 alone got 92%. The doctors didn't want to listen to the AI. So the reader context note was the figures referenced are diagnostic reasoning scores, not final diagnosis accuracy. Per supplement table, GPT-4 had the correct diagnosis 66% of cases compared with 62% of the doctors. But this is not a significant difference. I don't know. Which one do you want to diagnose you?
I mean,
and I would. Yeah, and it's not even necessarily a fine-tuned model. That's the thing. It's like, oh, well, it was only 4% better than doctors. The fact that it was in range of doctors is the news. That is the news, that this thing was in range of doctors.
Yeah, man. There's even if it's doctor-like, you know, even if it's a 50%, yeah, even if, what's the old joke? What do they call the person who graduated last in medical school? Doctor.
Doctor. You know? Doctor. Well, I mean, also because it's available for free wherever you are, and you don't have to look into a human's face to talk about a potentially embarrassing thing, and therefore you could actually get care earlier than you would otherwise. I mean, knowledge-based professions are something that are going to have to understand that their product has to change, and the best practitioners of it will be able to utilize this technology. But there have been some industries, the medical profession is one of them, that I know that Andrew and I have had long conversations about its shamanistic tendencies, that you're just essentially building a series of moats between you and an old wise poobah who's going to take 5 seconds out of their day to bless you with their knowledge. And if I have an opportunity to just ask my forever patient British assistant exactly what this thing on my leg would be, as opposed to going through the oftentimes onerous job of dealing with a doctor's office, guess what? I'm just gonna be more tuned into my health. I'm gonna actually be a healthier, better person when it comes to the day in, day out issues with maladies. And when you look at the crisis that we have currently with primary care physicians, there's less of them and people interact with them far less, and the longstanding problem specifically with men that don't go to doctors, they don't interact with medical professionals for various different reasons. This is like a godsend. And I hope it's a gigantic wake-up call to the medical profession. I hope so.
Go ahead, Andrew.
No, please, Brian.
Oh, no. I was just going to double down on your sentiment, Justin.
Yeah, my wife, we had to go to the emergency room. She's been, an issue where they're like, oh, well, to speak to a doctor, it'll take you 2 weeks. Best thing is just to go to the emergency room. And it wasn't like, you know, she's in any immense danger. But when you're told, well, you need to go to the emergency room if you want to actually speak to a person, your medical expert for this, which is frustrating. And you know, and again, this is a universal problem globally, from private systems to public systems, all this. This is just, and as you know, people get older, the costs go up, whatever. It's just a factor of, you know, with healthcare is one of the fastest increasing expenses in any budget, just going to be a problem of that. And you know, at the end of it, you know, we come out of it with like, well, maybe do some tests, maybe do this. I don't know. And it was just sort of the shrug. And it was like, when we were getting ready to go, my wife comes in my office. And what are you doing? I'm putting my laptop into my bag. Is why are you bringing that? I go, because we're going to the emergency room and it's going to be several hours there long waiting. You know, you're going to walk in. They're going to see if you're immediately ready to pull over. If you're not, you're going to sit down and you're going to wait and you're going to wait and you're waiting. We were there like 6 hours. And yeah, at one point they separated us, not because they had to, but because just the nurse, just, you know, the practitioner, whatever, just decided that she just wanted fewer people in the other room. And so my wife is sitting there by herself. And this is just, it was a horrible experience, you know. And I asked, you know, I remember asking a doctor for directions, and I got the most could give an F response about like whatever. And this guy's probably Ryan or worked a very long shift and stressed, so I wasn't like angry at him, but I'm like, I just want the robots. And I'm not convinced that there is anything, that there's any human presence that I need. Get these things a bunch of sensors, get these things training. When we're GPT-4 is scoring as well as doctors in a lot of systems, we haven't even seen what's happened. By the way, we have, you know, the O1, which we talked about previously, OpenAI's O1, where basically what it is, it's a system that knows how to think longer, can spend more time thinking about it. We haven't seen any of the data yet on what O1's doing for diagnoses, other than I've heard some anecdotal stuff. Get ready. You're going to find that it's going to be probably superhuman than most doctors in a lot of diagnoses. And when we start giving it more information and training them,
it's going to short circuit the discussion when it's like the ethical dilemma is, okay, how many humans do you want to consign to an early grave because of your pride about the magic of a human doctor?
Yeah.
Well, we'll still manage to do that.
I hope that we look at it in the era of, akin to the era of blood humors and, you know, the various different hokum. I hope that this is how we look at the way that we looked at the medical profession. Patreon.com/weirdthings is where you need to go if you want to support this show and not the, I don't know why we got my anti doctors think, but
oh no, I'm always here for it. Anti-college Justin, one of my favorite Justins, anti-doctor, anti-elitist wizard. If it's hard, I'm here for, we haven't gotten to anti-auto mechanic Justin, but I'm sure he's there somewhere.
No, auto mechanics are like, they're hit or miss. They're like, they're either absolute dead-eyed sociopathic con men or like the most friendly the dwarf from Lord of the Rings. It's either Gimli or just a total
Tom Bombadil.
Yeah. Hey, I have to roll a little early for this episode. Do we want to get into picks a little bit ahead of schedule? So there's been a lot of conversation about our modern world of streaming television options. And we saw a lot of content come out over the previous 5 years that obviously came to a screeching halt with the strike. And so now we're looking at projects that either had started before then or started after then that are learning the lessons of what had happened before. A few of the things that were complaints, and I think rightly, was that these shows, especially in the genre world, were way too expensive, that necessitated them being gigantic hits, or they were just never going to go anywhere past that, and out and out boring, oftentimes because there was more of a slavish devotion to, you know, certain maybe social justice elements as opposed to having the characters be interesting and fun and have conflicts. So I'm here to say with happiness and joy in my heart that I really enjoy Agatha All Along on Disney Plus, that it has been reported that it is the cheapest Marvel show that they have ever done. It doesn't look it. It looks great. It looks fun for what they had to do. You know, this is a story of continuing on from WandaVision, which I loved, but now Agatha Harkness, who is revealed in that show, now has no powers and has to get them back. That's the story of this this thing. I thought that the first two episodes took a little bit to get ready, but ultimately it's a female-driven show about female relationships as her and her put-together coven are walking the Witch's Road. And the episode that just came out this week was the first one that I'm like, okay, I get it. I get the aesthetic. When it wants to be creepy, it can be creepy, but really the vibe of this is Stevie Nicks witchy. Like, imagine like Fleetwood Mac, Stevie Nicks kind of crystals witchy, but Catherine Hahn. And I think credible, fun mysteries that they're working within the confines of their lesser budget. So instead of the Witch's Road being this super crazy, really creative thing, each time they have to walk a road of trials. So each episode is one of the trials. They're using the convention of each trial being a house that they got to figure out their way out of, but it never feels small. It always feels like each house through costuming and the way that they shoot it is something that is different and fun. And I think that's often been a problem with some of these other very bloated, very, very expensive shows. And Andrew and I have talked about this forever, is that they look cheap. This is a show that didn't spend all that much money, and it looks awesome because of the way that they put it together. So I would say Agatha all along. I've enjoyed it.
I'm curious. I'll be sure I'll try it, because like I actually like She-Hulk until the horrible last episode. Like She-Hulk was fun and had some energy into it, and then it's like anybody who hates it, I'm not going to argue with you. I get it, but it was actually more competent than I thought, sort of that, where I don't even think I could ever get into Acolyte, because that just looks like it's, you know, somebody brought up a point on a YouTube video I watched where they said Acolyte cost almost as much money as Dune 2.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really funny that, like, I think this is like the second story that I've seen that Agatha all along is like, it only cost $40 million or something like that. And it's like comparing it to other stuff. So I wonder who's putting that out. I assume that it is people from the show that just want to say like, hey, look, we don't need that much money. We can do it for X amount of price, well, because some of these have been just so bloated.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is when you get the criticisms, like, yeah, the fact that when you look at Acolyte was like, $20 million per episode or something. Like, yeah. Obi-Wan Kenobi looked like garbage. That show just looked cheap. Sucked. Like, yeah. It was just, you know, production. And you kind of wonder, I think one of the criticisms we've known from people who work at Disney is that Disney gets to be so middle manager heavy, like so much in there that you end up at a point. And I think that's probably what's happened to a lot of the productions at Marvel and I think Star Wars, is that the number of execs involved and the salaries that get associated with that is just ballooned so much that you just get very little on screen.
Yeah. And you know, ultimately a lot of this stuff, it's not rocket science, right? Television is something that like you could write it on the page. In this episode, this thing happens, a conflict, a cost. Wow. Our characters have changed. I wonder how it's going to affect them going forward. We're seeing how they bond with each other. It's not like secret knowledge. It's just something that I think oftentimes gets sucked under the weight of the production itself. But so far so good. I think that Agatha all along is something that has gotten better each episode. The first two I was like, all right. This, by the end of the second episode, we're basically into the adventure that we know is going to be the rest of the show. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't know if we needed two episodes to get there, but we're here. And then the next one was good. And this one was, I thought, like, it's like, okay, it found its vibe. The characters, you know who the characters are. You have a sense of how real the world is, and they're doing things that you're like, oh, okay, cool. I'm having fun.
Awesome.
Very cool. I've been combing through the meta, their movie gen, which is their new video generator, and looking at the paper on that. A lot of details about that.
This was announced. I know you mentioned when was this announced?
Like yesterday.
Wow. Seeing it, it's one thing to hear about it, another thing to look at it. There are some of these that absolutely pass muster. And there are others that look kind of uncanny valley Pixar-y, where it's like at first it looks good, but then you kind of see some too sharp edges, but it's incredible.
One of the cool things in there, Brian, if you look where their people are, just they have ones where you supply your photo and then it creates a scene based on that. And that's like super interesting, because basically the idea that the personalized videos where it starts with a photo and then it figures out how to map that person into that environment.
Oh, wild. So in other words, they've got a doctor working in a lab and like, what if that doctor was me?
Yep.
And is this available yet?
I don't think it's, I think there's to limited
beta.
Yeah. Like the turn on these things are just so intensive.
Yeah.
I think they're going to push this thing out there as much as they can, you know?
That's really remarkable stuff. Now, of course, they're actually, you know what? They do have a few like non-fantastical examples here, but they're all very pro photographer looking.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that that's not any indication that it won't be able to do totally believable, candid stuff.
Yeah, the challenge is really going to be being able to handle complexity. The idea of all, because you're seeing things that are like a single subject for the most part in a frame, you know, a person doing that. You know, you're not getting a crowd of people or a man, you know, somebody handing an envelope to somebody else and somebody reading it. You know, you're getting very sort of simple sorts of things. And that's going to be the problem. The kind of compute to make things more complex will be challenging, but not insurmountable.
Man, it's just, I mean, again, I know we say this a lot, but it's happening very fast, gentlemen.
Yep.
Oh, boy. All right, friends, I have to take my leave. I'll see you later.
All right. Take care, adieu. Justin.
Bye.
Man, I just want to gawk at all of these video. If you just search for Meta Video AI, I'm sure you'll find.
Yeah, MovieGen.
It's worth taking a look at. It's unreal.
Well, and a couple of features are really great. Like they have a thing where you can take a video input, then add a text. Like they have, like if you go back to the one before, the guy, like they said, put the guy in front of a stadium, you know. And you think for blue screen and a lot of other kinds of things, that it's going to be the most directly impactful thing right now is for VFX and stuff, where literally you just take your still of your actor and say, okay, your video frame, not your video, but your video of an actor and say, okay, I need to have fire come out of his hands. And yeah. 2 minutes later, you got the effect.
Well, and to be honest, like the difference between the original video is you just see a blue sky in the background versus you see a, you know, outdoor stadium with a lot of people. It makes me feel like the big winners are going to be low budget productions that are story driven stuff. Like, for example, let's say you're doing a Lifetime movie or whatever, then what you have to do to get a shot like that happens to be, let's say, at a high school football game, is you have to actually go find a high school football game. And then you have to cut to an awkwardly up close shot because you can't obviously fill a whole stadium full of people just for one romantic conversation that they're having. But meanwhile, adding this out of focus blurry in the background is going to be a snap.
Yeah, look at some of the other examples of edit video text. They have like, there's a guy running in the desert. Right there. And so original video, guy just running out in the desert. Then it did text input, turn it to a cactus desert. And so now it's a slightly more colorful desert with cacti around him. You know, they said, oh, let's make him into an inflatable dinosaur. So all of an inflatable dinosaur. And it's just that kind of capability. You know, it's interesting too. Like a lot of these things you have to kind of look at and go, what am I not seeing here? You know, what examples are they not showing me? You know, it shows you where
it is funny. It's like we've become a little bit cynical over the years when we've seen multiple hype cycles boom and bust. And I feel like both of us are like, what is the picture being drawn in the negative space of every announcement?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's the, you know, that's the thing that's going on. I think the image space is interesting because, like, I can tell you, like, I would tell you that probably Sora is technically better than this than any other model out there because it's physics capabilities. But you know, DALL-E 3 is technically the best image model out there, but if you really want to have a bunch of different styles and things like that, it's, you're going to choose something else. And I think that's, you know, often you kind of realize where people kind of like, they look at some things and don't notice other things.
Yeah. Boy, with fantastical objects, this really sings, mainly because my brain doesn't have many references to compare it to. Like, we're seeing a looks like a capuchin monkey in a hot spring with a toy boat. It looks real enough to these eyes.
Yeah, yeah. I we're at the point where a lot of the stuff would go by you and never notice. I wouldn't notice.
Yeah, and the prompts are very detailed. Text input summary: a fluffy koala bear surfs. It has a gray and white coat and a round nose. The surfboard is yellow. The koala bear is holding onto the surfboard with his paws. The koala bear's facial expression is focused. The sun is shining. And danged if that's not what we're seeing. Hey, I'm going to use one of my slots for a pick to celebrate one of our previous guests on the Weird Things podcast, and to make sure I get it all right, Annalisa was kind enough to forward along. Do you remember our friend JF Dubow when we had him on?
Of course.
Yeah. He's one of our exemplars. We're big fans of independence of all stripes, but JF Dubow, I'm going to plug his book. First of all, the website that everyone needs to go to is Aquillow, Aquillow.com/book. And the story, here we go. Annalisa writes, friends of the show, Amy Frost and JF Dubow are 7 seasons into their delicious audio drama, Aquillow, and it's now time to turn it into a book. Pre-order your copy now at aquillow.com/book. And if you buy 3 of them, you get your name in the book, as well as some other treats. They need 750 pre-orders by Halloween, and are just a smidge over halfway there. So head on over to aquillow.com/book to get them past the finish line. And let me give you a summary on that. But obviously, you know this game, Andrew, where it's like, when it comes to pre-ordering, it's like, you know, 100 units are $1 billion. 1,000 units are $1 billion plus one. So it's like you want to get to that quantity on there.
I bought mine back in August.
Oh, dang it. Okay. Tagline is part Twin Peaks, part practical magic. Aquillow is a story about coffee, magic, baking, and demons. Join Miriam Dufour as she navigates the quirky and not so quiet town of Aquillow, where your coffee comes from a steampunk monstrosity with an attitude problem, and the macarons might bite back. Lovesick ghosts and starving demons? Just another Tuesday in Aquillow. So read all about it at aquillow.com/book.
Yeah, sounds great. Like I said, JF is a great guy, super energetic, you know, who's been out there, has been really writing some great stuff. And so, yeah, the moment he told me about this, I just went and ordered it. I'm a sucker for my friends. my pick is, you know, I've been enjoying, is it got a little weirder than usual, but only Murders in the Building. Still a fun show.
You know what? I think we talked about this previously, but, you know, I'm watching it for Cord Killers, and I'm just fascinated by the pacing. I don't know if I already went on my little rant about, it's kind of adorable how slow motion everything is. It's clearly the leads are getting up there in years, and also the intended audience is getting up there in years. So as a result, I don't know. It's got a lot of heart. And I've been enjoying just dropping in without any context into season 4.
Yeah, I think it's got great talent, quirkiness. You know, when you can get Meryl Streep and Eugene Levy to play side characters on a thing, pretty cool.
Yeah. So I guess we did picks early on. Do we have another story that you wanted to cover?
You know, I think. You know, the movie Gin, go check that out. You know,
yeah. So. wait. It's so interesting. It's just, I don't know, AI so fast. Like, just watching the AI show is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time talking about and after things about like how to adjust and how to adapt. And it is a very fast paced moving world.
How's it been for this hour?
It's been weird.